dedicated to the survival of American democracy in an increasingly dangerous world, this is Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney, acted as Assistant Secretary of Defense for International Security Policy under President Ronald Reagan, founder and president of the Center for Security Policy in Washington, D.C., the go-to man for defense and foreign policy issues, joined by the greatest minds in the security policy business, the special forces in the war of ideas, and Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney.
Welcome to Secure Freedom Radio. This is Frank Gaffney, your host and guide for what I'm thinking of as really an intelligence briefing on the war for the free world, as I call it, to discuss a very important facet, I'm afraid all too little understood facet of the war for the free world. I'm very pleased to have with us a senior fellow of the Center for Security Policy and now best-selling author, as well as a chartered financial analyst, a man who knows his way around a balance sheet, among other things, as well as the nature of economic warfare that is being waged against us. His name is Kevin Freeman. He is the author of two superb books. The first is Secret Weapon. It is a book that has, I think, properly rocketed him to celebrity as a thinker on and advocate for real concern about economic threats to this country and how they are being manifested, have been in the past, and are today. But Kevin has, in addition to Secret Weapon, How Economic Terrorism Brought Down the U.S. Stock Market and Why It Can Happen Again, also just recently published Game Plan, How to Protect Yourself from the Coming Cyber Economic Attack. I've known Kevin for a number of years now. I think we first met in 2009. He worked for Sir John Templeton for 10 years, earning his chops in the financial business. And it is a marvelous thing to have his expertise brought to bear on a subject that, as I say, needs a lot more attention at the highest levels and from all of us as we think about this war for the free world. So, Kevin, welcome back to Secure Freedom Radio. Happy New Year to you, and congratulations on Game Plan. We're looking forward to having a full hour to talk about it with you today.
Thank you, Frank. Happy New Year.
Before we turn to Game Plan, let's set the stage a little bit, Kevin, in terms of the work that you have done that precedes this. Going back to your presentations to the Pentagon, I think starting in June 2009, shortly after we met, in which you tried to lay out some of what you believe might have been perpetrated against us in the fall of 2008 to quite, well, cataclysmic effect, I would say, both economically and arguably politically.
Sure. Back in actually September of 2008, I was sitting at my desk and another senior fellow of the center, Michael DeRosso, gave me a call and said, "What's happening in the markets?" And I told him and warned him for months that there were coming attacks that looked like elements were trying to bring down certain stocks. And he said, "Well, I've got two friends coming into Dallas-Fort Worth that I'd like you to meet. One was Steve Coughlin, and the other is John Guandola, two men you know well." Coughlin at the time was still attached to the Joint Chiefs, and Guandola was with the FBI. And they came in and talked to me about Sharia, the threat. And I said, "Well, here's another way enemies of our country could go about it. They could just simply crash our stock market, hack our systems, bring our economy down, and it would bring a very quick collapse to the United States." So they went back, and before I knew it, I was doing something I never in my life imagined I would do, which was writing a formal white paper for the Pentagon, followed by another formal white paper, followed by the final presentation of a comprehensive report on what was taking place in 2008 and how it made us vulnerable to enemies of the United States. And what we found was quite clearly that Russia, China, sovereign wealth funds in the Middle East, radical Islamic groups, Venezuela, Iran, North Korea, all had plans in attacking the U.S. using economic means primarily. And that some of those plans were actually put into effect in 2008, either triggering or at least worsening the financial crisis that we saw.
Kevin, I think you were the first to point this out to me, that the mayhem that was unleashed on Wall Street in the circumstance involving principally, at least initially, Lehman Brothers, began on September 11th, 2008. It is your thesis that that was not an accident, comrade. Is that right?
Frank, that is correct. It was September 11th, 2008 that we saw a massive ramp up in the use of financial weapons of mass destruction aimed at Lehman Brothers, and that simultaneously in the press in the Middle East, we saw this as a celebration over the collapse of a Jewish bank. And so when you put all of the dots together, it certainly looks like a financial terror attack, and it matches with the doctrine that was espoused by bin Laden and others, which is hitting the American economy through all possible means.
Talk a little bit about that doctrine, what we know of bin Laden's thinking and planning on this. We're all very familiar, of course, with this sort of kinetic form of jihadism that he had espoused. What do we know about the founder of al-Qaeda's views on and preparedness, in fact, perhaps even utilization of economic warfare instruments against this country? Kevin Friedman.
Well, bin Laden wrote quite a bit about how and took credit for collapsing the Soviet Union. He brought down a great superpower, and the way that he did it was he strained their resources to the limit. And there's some validation of that in that the United States simultaneously was using economic weapons in the Reagan administration against the Soviet Union, and in fact their economy did collapse. So he saw that as the means by which to bring down the superpower of America. At the same time, he was a reader of and a fan of a book published in 1999 by two senior colonels of the People's Liberation Army titled Unrestricted Warfare, in which bin Laden's name is mentioned something like 21 times in the book. And that's how I'm convinced that he was a reader and a fan of it, because he was an egomaniac, and any time he saw his name, he was curious about it. And we know that from the fact that when they found him, he had all these videotapes watching himself repeatedly.
And Kevin, this is a critical point. I think in addition to what we learned about bin Laden's attitude towards economic warfare, there's a sort of counterpart to it on the part of the Muslim Brotherhood, most especially the so-called nonviolent jihadist, that involves the practice of what they call civilization jihad. Talk, if you would, a little bit about Sharia-compliant finance as an instrument of economic warfare being used by, among others, Muslim Brotherhood and affiliated entities and individuals.
Yeah, the going back to the beginning writings in the Muslim Brotherhood, there's the term of economic or financial jihad that basically says using our money against us. And that's carried through to the point that when the Malaysian ringgit it didn't completely fail, but it came under serious attack in the Asian currency crisis in the late 1990s. The prime minister there, who was a proponent of Sharia-compliant finance, said horrible things about George Soros. You know, he's this blanking Jew, and that's his words, not mine, trying to destroy our currency. And then he then opined at length about how the George Soros-style techniques could be used to destroy a nation. And then he later met Mr. Soros, and they became friends. And so he said you could use things like naked short selling, which was one of those instruments used against Lehman Brothers, and you could bring down a whole country. And there are extensive writings on this. So I believe that the concept of Sharia-compliant finance, financial jihad, and unrestricted warfare all came together in a full understanding in 2007, 2008, and those weapons began to be applied, and they almost brought down the entire global financial system, which to us would be a bad thing, but if you are a radical in your Islamic beliefs, you think that might be ushering in something wonderful and good for the world, which would be finance under the control of Allah, which would be Sharia and Allah's laws of Sharia, Sharia-compliant finance, and you think that'd be a good thing. So we see it as bad, they see it as good, but it all happened right about 2008.
We're going to talk after the break with Kevin Freeman, the author of Secret Weapon, the subtitle of which was How Economic Terrorism Brought Down the U.S. Stock Market and Why It Can Happen Again. And now, most recently, the author of Game Plan, How to Protect Yourself from the Coming Cyber Economic Attack, looking at what actually did happen in the way of economic warfare and its repercussions, and then what response the U.S. government took to it. That and more right after this.
Listening to Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney from the nation's capital in Washington, D.C.
On August 2nd, 2006, Mark Allen Lee became the first Navy SEAL to lose his life in Iraq.
Debbie Lee became a Gold Star mom that day.
And it started a lifelong mission of her own. In Mark's honor, Debbie founded America's Mighty Warriors.
Dedicated to supporting the troops and their families.
AMW educates the public through speaking engagements, rallies, and events to raise awareness and appreciation of our military.
AMW advocates for the troops.
Funding, rules of engagement, benefits. AMW is committed to being a voice for justice for our troops. AMW serves Gold Star families. Retreats, concerts, special events.
Good things to remind the families they're not forgotten.
America's Mighty Warriors.
Nonprofit.
Dedicated to the troops and their families.
Donations are tax deductible.
Log on to americasmightywarriors.org.
Find out how you can help.
The best of America deserves our best. Log on today.
americasmightywarriors.org.
Hey, this is Frank Gaffney. My day job is running the Center for Security Policy, which each weeknight brings you this program. But Secure Freedom Radio is just one of the important contributions the Center makes to the common defense. We call our team the Special Forces in the War of Ideas. Like the real Special Forces, we strive to be agile, creative, and highly effective in identifying threats to our country and how they might best be countered. We can't do all this without you, though. Also, like the real Special Forces, ours need ammunition. And in the war of ideas, ammo is money. The Center is a nonprofit, tax-exempt organization. Contributions to its work are tax-deductible and an important investment in your security and freedom. Find out more about the Center for Security Policy and how you can help keep its Special Forces team in the fight by visiting securefreedom.org. Many thanks.
I'm Robert Muse, co-founder and senior counsel of the American Freedom Law Center, our nation's premier public interest law firm fighting for your faith and freedom in courtrooms across America. Make no mistake, we live in a pivotal time. Secular progressives such as Barack Obama and his surrogates are zealously sweeping religion from the public square, foisting Sharia law and other harmful international precedents into our courts and constitution, assaulting the traditional family, and weakening our national defense by, among other things, undermining the strength of our military through social engineering and political correctness. But I can assure you that the American Freedom Law Center is aggressively engaging our nation's enemies with offensive lawfare to defend our fundamental rights and to fight stealth jihad in all of its forms, including the civilization jihad being waged by Muslim Brotherhood front groups operating here in the U.S. Indeed, there is no other public interest law firm as uniquely qualified to fight this battle. But we need your prayers and financial support to succeed. Please consider a tax-deductible donation to support our critical fight for your faith and freedom. Visit us at www.AmericanFreedomLawCenter.org.
This is Frank Gaffney with the Secure Freedom Minute. 34 Air Force officers were just removed from their posts in U.S. missile silos for breaking the rules. Unfortunately, this is not the first sign of morale and readiness problems with personnel in these sensitive positions. In fact, such problems are the logical and predictable consequence of the decades of neglect of our deterrent forces. The airmen and women who stand the truly lonely watch in these silos to protect the rest of us must feel their mission has been devalued, if not imperiled, by their commander-in-chief. After all, he is determined to rid the world of nuclear weapons, starting with ours. We must restore the good order, discipline, and sense of purpose of our missile personnel. That will require a new national commitment to preserving and upgrading our nuclear deterrent. This is Frank Gaffney with the Secure Freedom Minute. Learn more at securefreedom.org.
If you don't know where Bill Bennett stands, here are some of his beliefs.
I believe Americans should largely do much more for themselves than many Americans are doing.
But do I rule out government as something that might be able to assist in that? And that I do not.
I do think families, churches, and schools are better places for that to happen. People should do for themselves what they can. Government should do what people cannot do for themselves.
Get to know Bill Bennett, weekday mornings from 6 to 9 on 1260 WRC. New Choice, Intelligent Talk.
Listening to Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney from the nation's capital in Washington, D.C.
We're back joined by Kevin Freeman, a senior fellow at the Center for Security Policy. He is a chartered financial analyst and a man who has contributed mightily to our understanding of economic warfare, both past, present, and prospective, and most immediately with a new book, which we're discussing with him for this full hour, I'm very pleased to say, entitled Game Plan, How to Protect Yourself from the Coming Cyber Economic Attack. Kevin, before the break, we talked a little bit about the doctrinal impulses of some of our enemies, ranging from the Russians and Chinese to Osama bin Laden, al-Qaeda, and the Muslim Brotherhood. Talk, if you would, in a little bit more detail about what actually happened starting on September 11th, 2008, that takes this out of the realm of the abstract into a very concrete example.
Well, a couple of things happened. The first one is that Lehman Brothers, which was one of the largest Wall Street banks, became subject to a naked short selling attack. And most people aren't aware of even what short selling is, but that's where you borrow shares of a company and you sell them, hoping the price will go down, and then you buy them back and you return the loan. Naked short selling is literally making up fake certificates of a stock and selling it. So in the case of Lehman Brothers, someone sold over the course of a week 100 million shares of stock they did not own, had not borrowed, didn't exist anywhere, and of course that supply just flooded the market and people panicked, and no one wanted to own shares of Lehman Brothers, and it's no longer a viable entity today. It went bankrupt.
Yeah, it was essentially taken down and causing a ripple effect that, as we talked about a little bit before, Kevin, and I want to come back to momentarily, with profound political effects in this country as well as economic dislocation. We're speaking with Kevin Freeman, a senior fellow at the Center for Security Policy. And Kevin, you just laid out what naked short selling is and how it was used in 2008 to take down Lehman Brothers. How did the government of the United States, how was it affected by this economic impact? Talk a little bit, if you would, most especially about the election that followed 2 months later.
We've seen throughout history that when an economic collapse happens like we experienced in 2008, that it generally results in a regime change of some kind. And so the immediate thought when we saw all of this naked short selling and use of credit default swaps, the financial weapons of mass destruction, all these derivative high-end Wall Street trades taking place and attacking, the immediate thought was maybe it's George Soros trying to win the White House for Barack Obama. And a lot of people made that connection and case. But think a little more sinister and worse than that is what if a foreign power, sovereign wealth funds in the Middle East, Muslim Brotherhood, or whatever, use this as a blunt but effective instrument in affecting elections. And that, in fact, appears to have been some of the motivation, at least in regard to the timing. Because going into the election at September 11th, John McCain and Sarah Palin were actually leading in the polls. And now in hindsight, it looks ridiculous to even imagine that they could have won that election. You know, they lost by so much and they were behind by so much. They were leading on September 11th, and once this happened, everything switched. And so when I brought this up in Washington shortly after we met, One of the comments that came back was, you will never get the government to look at this because it doesn't fit the narrative and it looks embarrassing to the White House.
Yeah. You mentioned George Soros, Kevin Freeman, and I do want to double back on this. Whether he was actually complicit in this attack, whether he might have contributed to the thinking that went into it based on his own past destructions of currency and attacks on economic institutions of other countries. He certainly confirmed that what went on was a bear raid using naked short selling as the tool, didn't he?
Oh, absolutely. In March of 2009, right at the very low point of the stock market, he wrote an op-ed in the Wall Street Journal, and he exactly laid out confirmation of what my research had said. And it's interesting because the Chinese reference him in the book Unrestricted Warfare, published in 1999, when they describe financial warfare, and they say the main protagonist in this section of the history book will not be a statesman or a military strategist, rather it will be George Soros. And then they likened him to a financial terrorist. So they learned from his techniques.
Promoting Osama bin Laden on the one hand and George Soros on the other, and making clear, this is, of course, a document that was published with the assent of the Chinese communist leadership, Unrestricted Warfare, Kevin Freeman, that makes perfectly plain that the Chinese see this as a viable instrument of warfare as well. So, Kevin, shortly after we first met, as you've mentioned, you were describing in some detail to the Pentagon what you believed happened to us in September 2008 and what could happen in even more horrific ways in the future if we didn't take steps to prevent it. How was this information received by, in the first instance, the Pentagon in 2009 and by other agencies of the U.S. government as well?
Initially, it was received very favorably. There were discussions about whether I should move to Washington and they should make this a prime focus of research. But very shortly thereafter, I got called and said, we decided that we're going to classify your open source research, and if you talk about it publicly, you'd be subject to jail time, and we're going to put it away. Fortunately, I had some good friends who are also friends of the center that that stepped in and made it plain to the authorities that would be a bad choice by sending copies of my research to three sitting senators at the time and said, look, don't mess around with this guy. They backed off, and as you know, I'm able to talk about it here today on this program and in my books.
And Kevin, one other piece of this that I think it's important to note is that you also sought to bring this to the attention of a federal commission that was trying to make sense of what happened in September 2011, among other things, presumably to try to mitigate the danger that it might happen again. Talk a little bit about your experience in regard to that commission and, again, what happened to your work.
Yeah, there was a congressionally mandated commission called the Financial Crisis Inquiry Commission. It was set up along the lines of the 9/11 Commission. It was bipartisan. The intention was to determine the nature and causes of the financial crisis of 2008. My research reached them in the latter stages of their hearings. I was told that they needed to get a clean copy with a chain of evidence. So I said, we'll get it from the Pentagon. I gave them the name of the person who was in the Pentagon that was responsible for initially sponsoring my work. They requested it, and they were told, we can't give it to you. And the excuse was that there was a copyright on it. And so, you know, my contract gave them the use rights for anything. But then I removed the copyright.
You certainly wanted to make sure it was available to them, of course.
Yes. Well, then when it got sent back, again, it was refused to be looked at. And then finally, after much digging, I found out what happened. I was told that there was a staffer that purposely kept it out. And now I looked through the staff list, and I found one name, the wife of the man in the Pentagon that Bill Gertz said had purposely kept this from seeing the light of day.
And that would be Michael Vickers, the Undersecretary of Defense for Intelligence, I believe.
Yes. Yeah, he was the ASD Solik at the time, but yes, he is...
Yeah. Kevin, so much more to talk about what your experiences have been with government, but we're going to turn next to Game Plan, your new book, How to Protect Yourself from the Coming Cyber Economic Attack. Important insights both into what has happened in the past and what is coming in the future. With Kevin Freeman, right after this.
You're listening to Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney from the nation's capital in Washington, D.C.
Hugh Hewitt keeps the Constitution first.
That's what the left is about right now. Not about this or that.
Regulation or restriction.
Not about keeping weapons out of the hands of the mentally disabled. It's about attacking the Constitution. And by the way, you cannot mess with the Second Amendment without messing with the First and the Fourth and the Fifth and the Tenth. You either respect the Constitution or you don't.
The Hugh Hewitt Show. Weeknights at 6 after Michael Medved at 3 on 1260 WRC. New choice. Intelligent talk.
This is Jenny Thomas. I do video interviews of leaders with the Daily Caller. I had the privilege recently of interviewing Diana West about her extraordinary new book, American Betrayal, The Secret Assault on Our Nation's Character. You can see it at dailycaller.com. American Betrayal reads like a spellbinding historical thriller, but it is also a carefully documented account of how the U.S. government was penetrated by communist agents in the years after President Roosevelt normalized relations with the Soviet Union. Diana West shows how a similar assault is being mounted today by yet another collectivist ideology, the supremacist Islamic doctrine of Sharia. She establishes that while the communists and the Islamists may have very different visions of the world, they have employed the same techniques to defeat America. Please watch my conversation with Diana West about American Betrayal, then check out the other great leaders we profile at dailycaller.com.
This is Frank Affney with the Secure Freedom Minute. Ever since Edward Snowden began disclosing highly classified information about the National Security Agency, Americans have been subjected to a steady drumbeat of demands to restrict, if not dismantle, the NSA. President Obama is expected to announce today new limitations on ways in which intelligence is collected and potentially life-saving information made less available to counter terrorist analysts. These restrictions will compound the effects of Team Obama's announcement yesterday that adherence to the jihadist Islamic code of Sharia can't be used to identify potential threats. Fortunately, 17 prominent former national security leaders have just warned Mr. Obama that, quote, in a world that is every bit as dangerous as that of the immediate pre-9/11 period, a superior intelligence capability is the critical first line of defense in keeping our country safe, unquote. Amen. This is Frank Affney with the Secure Freedom Minute. Learn more at securefreedom.org.
The Devil We Don't Know by Noni Darwish uncovers the dark side of revolution in the Middle East and the reason why Muslim countries are unable to dig themselves out of a cycle of revolution, political unrest, and tyranny. The constitutions of many Muslim countries state that Sharia law supersedes all other law, and that is why it has failed in providing a legal and political system where healthy democracy can flourish. In this dynamic, only tyrannical governments can survive. In The Devil We Don't Know, human rights activist and Center for Security Policy fellow Noni Darwish answers the tough questions. Why the Arab Spring won't usher in freedom and democracy or a feminist movement, and how Israel will be threatened by the new wave of Islamism after the so-called Arab Spring. The Devil We Don't Know by Noni Darwish. It's available at Amazon.com.
Hi, this is Frank Affney. You're listening to Intelligent Talk on WRC 1260 in Washington, D.C.
Now more with Frank Gaffney.
We're back, joined by Kevin Freeman. By my lights, he is one of the country's most thoughtful and certainly most knowledgeable experts on matters involving economic warfare, how they have been used against us and how they may in the future. He is the author, as we've been discussing, of a remarkable account of one such instance of economic warfare, it appears, September 11th, 2008, entitled Secret Weapon, How Economic Terrorism Brought Down the U.S. Stock Market and Why It Can Happen Again. But it's time to turn to the subject of the new book, which is, of course, not unrelated to the other, but looks forward as much as backwards. It is entitled Game Plan, How to Protect Yourself
from the coming cyber economic attack. Kevin, you've set the predicate here with explaining why this is not simply hyperbole or an abstract concept. Talk a little bit about cyber economic attack and what you mean by that, and how imminent you think such a thing might be in our future.
Just a few weeks ago, General Keith Alexander was being interviewed by 60 Minutes.
He is the head of the National Security Agency, of course.
Yes, and four-star general and pretty knowledgeable man in terms of cyber warfare. And here's his quote: "A foreign national could impact and destroy a major portion of our financial system and literally take down the U.S. economy." Direct quote. And here's another quote. Deborah Plunkett from the NSA said, "Don't be fooled. There are absolutely nation states who have the capability and intention to do just that, literally take down the U.S. economy." Now, if you let that sink in and you realize what I showed in 2008 happened, and we're even more vulnerable today. If Target can't stop hackers from stealing credit cards, if the NSA can't keep a rogue contractor from delving in and taking its most amazing or incredible secrets and to Moscow, no less, how in the world can we expect someone to fully protect individuals with their stock accounts, their 401ks, their bank accounts, and so forth? The bottom line is that we are more vulnerable than ever before, and yet there is no civil defense plan. What do you do? And that's why I wrote the book Game Plan, How to Protect Yourself from a Coming Cyber Economic Attack.
I just have to say, before we turn to some of the specific steps that you've identified that need both our attention and our action, Kevin Freeman, that, of course, today was the day President Obama announced that he was going to be imposing certain restrictions on the National Security Agency. So it is fitting to note that the guy running the place at the moment is very concerned about precisely this problem. And I fear that perhaps one of the consequences of the restrictions President Obama has announced will be to make that organization a little less capable of discerning and helping alert us to these dangers in the future. But Kevin, talk a bit about what you forecast, what you think perhaps General Alexander may have in mind when he forecasts this kind of threat. Is it another sort of financial manipulation of the stock market? Is it cyber warfare or hacking aimed at destroying the data upon which our economy depends so heavily, some combination of the two, or something else?
That's the fearful thing. It's any of the above. And that's the reason the book is titled Game Plan. We're in Super Bowl season, and now we've got the championship games coming up. If you're a defense and your opponent is running a play against you, you don't know if it's going to be a pass or a run or a trick play. And so you have to have a game plan. If they run this, then we will do this. If they throw the ball, we will do this. Likewise, with your personal finances, it could be a cyber hack that attacks the stock exchange and it just melts down. The Syrian Electronic Army, last year when we were talking about involving ourselves in the Syrian conflict, they shot across the bow when they hacked the AP Twitter feed and manipulated the algorithmic trading programs of Wall Street that pick up, you know, certain words. They saw words run across the AP Twitter feed, and the net result is the stock market sold off 1% in a matter of a second and just dropped. And they knew they could do that because they know we're vulnerable. So it could be that. It could be a hacking of the electric grid. If the electric grid goes down, the economy collapses. It could be the ATM networks where they just steal all the money. There's so many things that could cause panic, and that's the goal. It's unrestricted warfare. And when the Chinese wrote that in 1999, they said there are three ways, three new era weapons to use, and all three of them are subject to being used now. One is a single man-made stock market crash. The other is a cyber attack or hacking of our economy and financial system. And the third one is a currency manipulation to where they'd cause our dollar to crash. So the Chinese have discussed at length, they own the most of any foreign nation of our debt. If they want to threaten us, they could threaten to dump the debt. People say, oh, China would never do that. Well, you know what? We threatened to dump British debt in the 1950s to force the Brits on the Suez Canal crisis to ascend to our will. What would keep the Chinese from threatening to dump our debt if they wanted to take back Taiwan or something else? Russia, Vladimir Putin.
What we're told, Kevin, just to respond to what might have been a rhetorical question, but just to state the obvious, we're told that they couldn't possibly want to do that because they are so heavily invested in this country. We're consoled by some of the so-called red team on China, the people who are generally, I think, fatuously promoting its interests in this country and downplaying concerns about their hostile intent, that the engagement between the United States and Communist China at the trade and economic level is so thorough that it would be the height of folly for the Chinese, so self-destructive that they couldn't possibly contemplate it. That's, I take it, not your view.
No, it's not my view. Certain elements in China certainly believe that, and at times there may be truth in that. But look at the trading partners of Nazi Germany in the 1930s. You could have made a similar argument that it would be in their economic interest to continue to prosper and grow and come out of the economic difficulties that they had. Great industrial power. The Japanese, the same thing. No, it depends. It's an economist view, but it's not a military view. And to the degree that the PLA has sway and influence, and they have quite a bit of it, if that were true, why are they hacking our systems continually? Why are they acting belligerently? And even if it were true, at some point, it will be in a to take Taiwan back. It's worth more than the $1 trillion of U.S. dollars that they have. So it's a very naive view to imagine that no one would ever harm us on that basis.
And Kevin, one of the things that you've described in your new book, Game Plan, of course, is that this is in fact a problem for us as individuals, not just as a nation. And I guess one of the things that comes to my mind as you talk about cyber attacks having impacts on our personal condition, net worth, what have you. The recent episode with Target, the huge commercial chain being subjected to cyber attack, its provenance, I think, is still yet to be determined. But they made off with, 40 million records, something like that, a lot of personal data and so on. To the extent that that is just a small perhaps example of what might be in the offing. What was your takeaway? What is the piece of your prescription for protecting ourselves against cyber economic attack that comes to mind in that light specifically?
Well, there were 40 million credit cards stolen and 70 million other Americans that shopped there and had their identity information taken. And it was done with Eastern European code, some of it written in Russian, and it may have emanated from Romania. I mean, this just gives you a sense of how global this concern is, and that those hackers that wrote the code did it for money, and they certainly would be available to jihadists that wanted to crater our economy. So
jihadists or the People's Liberation Army or who knows who all else. Kevin, we're going to pause for one last moment. We are talking with Kevin Freeman, the senior fellow of the Center for Security Policy, specializing in economic warfare, a chartered financial analyst. You can read much more about him and his work at globaleconomicwarfare.com, and also check out his marvelous new book, Game Plan, How to Protect Yourself from the Coming Cyber Economic Attack. We're going to describe in the final segment with Kevin specific steps that you and our country need to take in that regard.
You're listening to Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney from the nation's capital in Washington, D.C.
There's a reason Bill Bennett doesn't go after people that disagree with him.
I don't think you persuade people when you yell at them,
when you make fun of them,
when you wave your finger and scold them. I don't think you turn anybody around. And I think the reason that you try to adopt the Socratic maxims of
candor, intelligence, and goodwill
is because people can change their minds.
They're not going to change their minds if you call them idiots.
I just don't think so.
Bill Bennett's Morning in America. Weekday mornings from 6 to 9 on 1260 WRC. New choice. Intelligent talk.
This is Frank Gaffney.
Something is seriously wrong when the FBI interviews a jihadist like Tamerlan Tsarnaev, the older of the two Chechens believed to have perpetrated the bombing of the Boston Marathon, and sees no evil. Yet, that is the predictable result of the shackling of the Bureau that has taken place in recent years. For example, in 2011, the Obama administration actually purged FBI training materials of information that warns of the connection between the Tsarnaev's kind of religious fervor and terrifying acts of jihad. And Team Obama has also effectively told the Bureau it must get the approval of Muslim Brotherhood operatives before it can do any such training in the future. This is a formula for much more jihad in America. It's time to free the FBI so that they can do their job and protect our country. If you agree, go to www.freethefbi.com. That's www.freethefbi.com.
Hey, this is Frank Gaffney. My day job is running the Center for Security Policy, which each weeknight brings you this program. But Secure Freedom Radio is just one of the important contributions the Center makes to the common defense. We call our team the Special Forces in the War of Ideas. Like the real Special Forces, we strive to be agile, creative, and highly effective in identifying threats to our country and how they might best be countered. We can't do all this without you, though. Also, like the real Special Forces, ours need ammunition. And in the War of Ideas, ammo is money. The Center is a nonprofit, tax-exempt organization. Contributions to its work are tax-deductible and an important investment in your security and freedom. Find out more about the Center for Security Policy and how you can help keep its Special Forces team in the fight by visiting securefreedom.org. Many thanks.
I had no choice the news that was given to me on August 2nd.
Gold Star mom, Debbie Lee.
But I did have a choice how I responded.
In August 2006, Mark Allen Lee became the first Navy SEAL to lose his life in Iraq.
I chose to put on Mark's boots, pick up his weapon, and stay in the fight for our troops and their families.
And America's Mighty Warriors was born.
Mark's name meant Mighty Warrior. And he definitely lived up to his name.
At AmericasMightyWarriors.org, you'll find Mark's last letter home.
Read it, and you'll know what AMW's about.
It's about service to active duty members of the military and their families.
Including care packages, visits, and more.
It's about supporting the wounded and the people who love them.
It's about the Gold Star family.
Special retreats, concerts, Mother's and Father's Day events to let them know they're loved and not forgotten. Donations are tax deductible and go directly where they're needed.
Read Mark's last letter home.
And just as he inspired his mom, let Mark inspire you to some random acts of kindness of your own.
At AmericasMightyWarriors.org.
Hugh Hewitt keeps the Constitution first.
That's what the left is about right now. Not about this or that.
Regulation or restriction.
Not about keeping weapons out of the hands of the mentally disabled. It's about attacking the Constitution. And by the way, you cannot mess with the Second Amendment without messing with the First and the Fourth and the Fifth and the Tenth. You either respect the Constitution or you don't.
The Hugh Hewitt Show. Weeknights at 6 after Michael Medved at 3 on 1260 WRC. New Choice. Intelligent Talk.
You're listening to Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney from the nation's capital in Washington, D.C.
Welcome back. We are visiting in our final segment of this very special program of Secure Freedom Radio with Kevin Freeman, best-selling author of Secret Weapon and now Game Plan, the prescription for protecting yourself against the coming cyber economic attack. And Kevin, you've laid out 8 steps that really describe pretty much soup to nuts the sorts of things that we as a country and in some cases as individuals should be taking to protect ourselves against such an attack. Go through those quickly with us if you would.
Step number one is we need to realize we're in a global economic war. And that should seem obvious, but to our government, there's no agency focused on this. And in fact, when I brought it up with leadership, they look at me with blank stares in many cases. They don't understand economics. We're in an economic war, and to fight it, we have to realize we're in it.
Is that true at the Treasury Department as well, would you say?
Treasury Department has a better understanding because they've been waging some of the war. Juan Zarate wrote a book called Treasury's War that admits many of the things that I say are in fact factual. We are in an economic war, and weapons are being used against us on a regular basis. So Treasury is a little advanced on the curve.
Step two.
Step two, take reasonable precautions. We mentioned naked short selling earlier in the segment. It's ridiculous. It's illegal, and we need to outlaw the things like credit default swaps, the very clear vulnerabilities we need to shore up, and I list a couple of those. Step three, we need to get money moving without money printing. What we're doing is that the Federal Reserve has been, with quantitative easing, adding $1 trillion a year to our economy, but it just has been flowing almost directly into the stock market. It's not helping the real economy at all. One way we could help the real economy is we have American corporations with foreign earnings overseas in the $2 trillion range. If we would alter our tax code and let them bring that money home and invest it and create jobs and so forth, it would strengthen the dollar, strengthen our nation. They're happy to do it. It would cost us virtually nothing because we're not getting any tax revenue off it. That is an easy-to-do thing, but politically it's hard to push.
Why is it hard to do politically, Kevin?
Because there's a long series of arguments, mostly from the left, that if you do that, then you're avoiding taxes and it's a bad precedent. President Reagan did it, and look, the corporations still built. The problem is we have a very poor corporate tax code. We're among the highest in the world, and corporations, if they earn a dollar overseas, when Apple sells to China Mobile a new iPhone, they're going to leave that money overseas unless we adapt the tax code to the modern world.
Step four,
achieve energy independence, something you've talked about quite a bit. Why should we be funding both sides of the war on terror? We have plenty of energy. As you and I have talked about with Boone Pickens, we need to develop as much domestic resource as we can, whether it's methanol, whether it's natural gas in cars, all of the above, as Boone says. But that would save our country hundreds of billions of dollars a year and, again, strengthen us in this global economic fight.
Right. And deny those funds to enemies of this country.
Absolutely.
Step five.
Reduce regulation. It's ridiculous that even something as simple as a lemonade stand is prevented in most major cities of the country. We have so stifled innovation, small business, and entrepreneurship through excessive regulation. Obamacare is a problem. It's not the only problem, though. We have a lot of problems that keep us from building up domestically. That's why we are growing at 2 to 3% per year, and China grows at 7 to 10% per year. We need to improve the regulatory environment.
Step six.
Workable tax code, a flat tax, a fair tax, a simplified current tax code. It doesn't matter. The problem is that taxes are onerous, and just understanding how to file the tax forms is onerous, and that, again, is slowing us from competing economically on a global basis.
Again, politically challenging, but you would argue a necessary step to protect the country against the kind of economic warfare being waged against us as we speak. Step seven.
And we have to teach what America is about, go back to the historical roots of our nation, realize the American exceptionalism, realize that our place in this world is to bring freedom and liberty. We've lost that sense, and the America haters are the ones that put us most at risk.
And that is translating into specifically economic risk, because?
If you think America doesn't deserve its place in the world, then you want to bring America down however possible. So, those same people would be hating American corporations, the Occupy movement, bring down Wall Street and so forth. That's where economic strength is, where a lot of our national strength emanates.
And finally, step eight.
Return to our spiritual roots. The best people around the country, you go and you travel, they recognize that there's something unique about America spiritually. We've tried to wipe any reference of God out of the marketplace and out of the political system, and that doesn't belong here in this discussion. And yes, it does, because most Americans believe in God, and if we return to our spiritual roots, if we'll repent as a nation from our pride and our arrogance and so forth, I believe we can. That is the most important step to returning our nation to greatness.
And Kevin, this is really a comprehensive treatment, obviously, of a multifaceted challenge. In part, as you've said, it arises from the multifaceted character of the threat, whether it is from states, communist China, Russia, notably Latin America, Iran, what have you, or from organizations, Muslim Brotherhood, Al-Qaeda, and the like, very much non-state actors. What you've also described, of course, is the multifaceted complexion of America today that puts us at risk. What kind of response have you been getting as you have been raising this alarm, first with the publication of Secret Weapon and now with Game Plan, on the part of audiences and, for that matter, elected and other leaders that you're interacting with? Is there a receptiveness to this message at this point, do you think? Are we still sort of sleepwalking in the face of these myriad and growing, it would appear, dangers?
The administration has not been entirely receptive, but the American public has. Everywhere I go, and I've given hundreds of talks, people realize there's something wrong economically. They understand that they're at risk, and they want a game plan to deal with it. I walk through the 8 steps our nation should follow in the book. I also cover individual steps of how to protect yourself. If we have a hyperinflation and the currency collapses, what do you do? If we have an attack on the electric grid, what do you do? How do you prepare in the case? And something we haven't talked about but it's mentioned heavily in the book is the EMP, electromagnetic pulse. So the receptivity, people know we're at risk, they know there's something wrong, and there's no one in the government giving them any type of game plan. I wrote the book, the response has been absolutely incredible. People come up and ask me, and then they're begging me, what do I do with my 401k and my investments? And I said, well, your advisor, your investment professional needs to have an understanding of this. They said they don't. And so we've created, with the Center for Security Policy Support at Oklahoma Wesleyan at the Keating Center for Capitalism, Free Enterprise, and Constitutional Liberty, a training program for investment advisors called the National Security Investment Consultant Institute, or NSIC Institute for short. And that is part of our grassroots effort to get the message out and then to equip people so that if we do enter a hotter conflict in this economic war, give people a real chance to survive and thrive.
Kevin Freeman, this is a tremendous public service, I think, your effort to train a cohort of chartered financial advisors who, like yourself, understand the national security challenges of our time and can help the rest of us equip ourselves as individuals and as citizens of this great country to contend with it. I want to thank you, Kevin, for both your work with us at the Center for Security Policy, for the new National Security Investment Center, and not least for your two superb books and the chance you've given me to talk with you about them at length again today. Folks, again, they are Secret Weapon, How Economic Terrorism Brought Down the U.S. Stock Market and Why It Can Happen Again, and most recently, hot off the presses, and I'm sure to be, I'm certain, a bestseller as well, Game Plan, How to Protect Yourself from the Coming Cyber Economic Attack. Kevin Freeman, thank you again. Keep up the good work. Come back to us again very soon, if you will, and I hope the rest of you will as well next week. Same time, same station. Until then, this is Frank Gaffney. Thanks for listening.
From the nation's capital, you've been listening to Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney.